thank the, you guys for having me up here, inviting me up here, and I'm impressed, you know, to be in a room full of people like you. I know there's a lot of people that are real happy that we're in here, community at large. Because if we were all out there doing what we used to do, man, there'd be a lot of problems. So, yeah, I'm, you know, it's just, it takes me back to, like, nearly the Omni Yard. You know, so many people, and of course it's a lot nicer yard out here, and for myself, you know, if I were to have gotten no more than never going back to the pen, that would have been enough to keep me here, you know. But for those of us that have been here for any length of time, you know that there's a whole lot more in store for you, you know. But in the beginning, for me, all the readings and all the stuff you know, I wasn't really absorbing a lot, you know, but I seen people here that had been where I had been and done what I had done, and they had a pretty good life, you know. So that was enough to keep me there that day, and, you know, it's been a day at a time since then. And, you know, hindsight being 2020, you know, you look back and you think, you know, at the shit that you used to do, the life that we had, and, you know, it's unbelievable, man, that we could live in that condition, man, and just keep going and keep going. But, you know, my dilemma was I never knew anybody that quit. You know, I did not know anybody. You know, I'd heard about a couple guys that ended up in the churches and all that stuff. I don't fit there, you know. And the reason that I don't fit there is when I first got here, you know, addicts, I accept responsibility for my actions today, but most of my life, you know, I'm blaming somebody for my circumstance, you know. And why not start at the top? God, you know, fuck him. Excuse my language, you know, that's just the way I felt, man, because I really believe that if I had had a fair shake at life, you know, things may have been different, you know. You know, convict, he's got a lot of years laying up in cell thinking about who? Himself, you know, why he's there, will he ever get out again, blah, 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 on and on and on, you know. And I used to trip on that, you know, and then, like I say, you know, I'm going to blame someone, I blame God. And so when I got here and I heard that thing, I thought, man, you know, more than likely I'm not going to make it here either, you know, because of that. And, you know, I was wrong, but I didn't know it then. But I just, it was a struggle in the beginning, but the longer I stayed around, the more I seen that, you know, this was a genuine thing, man. And, you know, there were people that, like myself, and in the beginning, the only people that I could really relate with were people that were exactly out of the same mold that I was out of. Convict, heroin addict, blah, 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 blah. And the other people, I thought, well, they're not really addicts, or they're too young, and on and on and on. And I was just full of shit all the way, man. But the whole thing for me is when I finally arrived here, you know, I was ready. I was ready, man. I had been out on, for the first time in my life, I stayed out of the penitentiary. I left Folsom in 1969. I discharged on parole the first time. I had been off of that since I was a child in the youth authorities. And I grew up in them places. I never stayed out here too long, and I did the best I could in there to stay loaded. You know, I know how to make the brew, and I know who's getting the visit, on and on and on. But I never really stayed out here. You know, I'd usually have a pretty short run, and I'd be taking a new beef back. And, you know, the broken record, man. I get loaded, I go to jail, I get out, I get loaded, I go to jail, I get out, I get loaded, I go to jail, I get out. Fucking broken record. Real boring life. You know, but like I say, man, I didn't know any other way, and I didn't know anybody that ever stopped, and I accepted the fact that sooner or later, hopefully later, I was just going to die from that shit or end up buried in the pen. So, and I could accept that, you know. And I'll have to say right at the end, how long do I do this for?
10 hours.
I lost track of what I was saying thanks to the methadone program, you know. old age, I guess, but I'll get back to it. It may come back, it may not. But anyway, okay, so, you know, I'm discharged, all of that stuff, and I lived on a little Catalina Island. That's where I lived for 6-7 years, you know, and I really kind of had it made over there. I mean, I was getting loaded. It was much more difficult over there because, you know, it's there's a lot of water between you and the connection, you know what I mean? So, putting that together and playing the drug stores, and I had a doctor that would write and on and on and on. You know, I did okay every day, staying loaded. And then that all ended, you know. It ended with a felony, you know. I never stopped on my own.
Is there any water?
I never stopped on my own. I had to be stopped, so I was stopped, you know. And I had put a play together, and a guy flew over to San Pedro. He was coming back. I had 5 spoons, whatever it was. And he didn't get back, and I was out there waiting for him at the last flight in, which was like 5 o'clock. He never showed. So I went home, and he called me, said, "Hey, man, I just missed the last flight, blah, blah, blah. See you in the morning. I got your stuff." He was gouged, man. He was plowed, you know, and I thought, that motherfucker shot my drugs, you know, all that shit. He says, "I'll see you in the morning." I says, "Okay, I'll be out there for the first flight," you know, which I never made. I never was out there for the first flight. And the reason that I wasn't is because later that evening, you know, I mean, I wasn't dope sick. I think I'd had some Percodan or something earlier in the day. But, man, I knew that shit was coming, and I knew I was going to get down, and I had to do something. I can't stay home and do nothing, you know. And there's a bar right down the street, the Chi Chi Club, and I thought, hey, man, I'll go up. Bartender's a friend of mine. I'll go down, have a few, man, maybe it'll kick those perks up a little bit, you know, have an okay evening, you know. And I went down there, and I drank for a while, and then the bartender says, "Hey, Billy, why don't you go home, you know?" I say, "Yeah, okay, give me one for the road." And I walked out with a Jack Daniels and a Styrofoam cup, and I've only got a half a block in my pad, man. Half a block, you know. And I drank quite a bit in there, and I was, you know, loaded, drunk, whatever, all one and the same. And halfway between the Chi Chi Club and my pad, there was a little clinic over on the right-hand side with a neon light, red. You know, there it is, man, clinic. And thank you. And I thought, you know what, man? I don't got to wait anymore. Everything I need is right in there, you know. So I graciously went over and fell through their window, you know, and I really fucked myself up bad. I got cut up real bad. I was bleeding. I could feel it. My neck was warm. There was blood running down my neck, and I had it all over my hands, and it's real slippery. And I'm inside the clinic, and I'm going through the narcotic cabinet when the sheriff arrived, you know. And so I'm done, man. I'm through. Every time, if there's a felony involved and I go to court, I go but one place, man, back home. Back home. They can't give you probation this time, you know. You go back to the yard. So, and I had been out, like I say, 6 years, whatever it had been, and I thought, man, you know, and I seen the yard again, the handball court, the domino tables, and I thought, man, that's going to be me for the rest of my life, you know. And I was in the back seat of the squad car, and they had to take me to the hospital because they had to sew me up. I was pretty fucked up. And, you know, and they took me in, they sewed me up, and then I had another real bright idea, you know. I thought, you know what, man? I'll make this motherfucker kill me. That's what I want, man. I don't want to go back to the yard. Not that I'm not in good standing there, because I still am. You know, I mean, I don't got to be locked up or PC'd or any fucking thing. So I thought, I'll make this guy kill me. See, I wanted out, man. I was done with this life, the only life that I knew, because I started using when I was 12. And I thought, man, I'm through. I'm done. Back to the yard and all that bullshit, man. I said, man, I'll make him do it. And I tried to, and he didn't. I was, you know, they sewed me up. I was cuffed behind, you know, behind the back. And he just chased me in the parking lot and kicked my ass into the car. And that was the end of the big story, you know. And I'm back in the slammer. And it was aggravated by my little brother, who was also in Avalon, the little community over there. And he heard what had happened, and he came over, and he was going to get me out. I don't know where he thought we might go. We're on an island. It's in the middle of the night now. And, you know, so he came over to the police department, you know, with a 30-30, you know. And he was cranking them off right into the police station. And anyway, the reason I'm just saying that, it's not like a war story. The reason I'm saying that, the incident made the papers. You know what I mean? And my brother ended up going to the penitentiary on that, you know, attempted murder on a police officer. But so it made the paper. So I'm, you know, wrapped in chains, both of us, and transported to that wonderful L.A. County Jail, you know. And a friend of mine, a guy that I had done a lot of time with, and I chopped dope with, who was even in youth authority with, you know, I mean, we just kind of grew up together in them places, Benny Weidenbender, you know, he wouldn't mind, he's gone, now he died clean, but he read it in the paper, and he came down to the county jail to see me. He says, hey, Billy, how you doing? I said, oh, man, you know, I'm doing okay. We're always doing okay, you know. And he says, well, look, man, he says, I don't know what your situation is, but he says, if you can bail, he says, you know, I got a place for you. He was the director of a recovery house. And, you know, I said, yeah, man, I'll do that for sure. I think one of the reasons I agreed, I wanted the $3 at the fucking window. That's what it was then, $3 on a visit. And you know, I had never made bail. I got out on a writ bond once, but I had never made bail. And I always had the story, hey, if I didn't have this parole hold on me, I'd be up out of here. You know, that was a lie. There was nobody out there that would bail me out, man. And miraculously, man, that time somebody bailed me out, you know. And I did what addicts do, man. I'd been down for a month. I wasn't dope sick at that point. And I got to get loaded. As soon as I get out of jail, I have to. I've got to do it, and I'll go to the liquor store until I can get to the connection, you know. And that's the only thing that I knew. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't get to the connection, but I called my doctor, and he phoned in 6 ounces of Tussinex cough syrup. Good enough. That'll get you there, you know. And I guzzled that down, and I got off really good, man. A real good one. Kind of like methadone almost in a way, you know, nodding and all that cross-eyed. And I went to the recovery house the next morning, you know, and I felt really good when we finally got there. It was in Pasadena, an area that I wasn't really that familiar with, but Leroy is. And I seen a drugstore on Fair Oaks, and I thought, man, that's good, man. I'm glad that that's there, because I'm going to this place. I've never been in treatment in my life, man. The only treatment that I got was from the state. So I thought, well, wherever there's a congregation of addicts, there's narcotics. That's it. There's narcotics. Somebody's got it there, and something's happening, and I'll surely find out who it is, you know. And I went there, and there was nothing there, you know. And I thought, well, you know, I can last here like maybe a day, you know. And when the drug is completely out of my system, I've got to leave. because I got to use, man. I have to use. And I know why I had to use today, because of the intensity of my own feelings. I don't know why you use. I use because it really changed the way that I felt. Really good, man. In the beginning, at the end, not so well anymore. But I, not knowing any other way, it's the only thing that I really knew how to do, so I just continued doing it. And so I went there and I checked in, and Ben had told me, he says, yeah, everybody that works here is recovering drug addicts, whatever those are. And I thought, well, I'm going to find out. And I went there and I seen people that they didn't look like they had been anywhere or done anything. And I thought, man, these are college kids, and they don't know about using drugs or anything like that, like Jim Stillwell. I thought, man, he's not an addict, man, you know, no way. And that was the beginning for me. And, you know, I was there, and, you know, you hear all the stuff that you hear at meetings, and I had to do something there because after a couple of weeks, a friend of mine came up and he says, a new acquaintance in my life, he says, hey, Bill, he says, you got to do something here. If you don't, they're going to kick you out. And I thought, man, I got nowhere to go. I really haven't got anywhere to go. And so I was going to fake it a little bit, you know, and I says, well, yeah, I'll get on it, you know, the steps and all the stuff that is really confusing in the morning. How can this change my life? What the hell is this going to do? And people would talk about the damnedest things at meetings, like relationships and this, and I thought, man, fuck all that. I just want to, you know, I don't care about all that. I just want to keep that shit out of my arm. If I can keep that stuff out of my arm, I'm going to be all right. That's how far gone I was. I thought if I just quit using drugs, I was going to be an okay guy. You know, and I found out how wrong I was, you know, because I had never learned anything about living, you know, nothing. I don't know anything. People were talking about buying homes and doing this and doing that. And I thought, how in the hell do they do that? You know, because I was the type of addict, like, I'd be driving down the freeway and then see somebody go by in a big motor home with a boats and motorcycles and all that shit. And I think, why don't they sell that shit, man? Because I computed everything like in piles of narcotics. Man. That's a lot of drugs there, man. And so anyway, you know, I was able to stay there, and I did a few of the things that they suggested. I did get a sponsor, and he, you know, he never did come and take me out, but he would come and visit me there and went over, you know, the steps and stuff like that. We, you know, we didn't have any literature. The only thing that was available then was the little white book, and so we used the AA book. And he took me through a few of the steps, and then, I don't know, I was there maybe 4 months or something like that, and I, you know, the day of reckoning came, man. The day of reckoning was the sentencing day, you know. That was the big deal, you know. I'm going to court in Long Beach, which is a terrible superior court, you know, for people like me, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to the pen. At least that's what I felt inside. Other people were telling me all kinds of positive stuff. Oh, you're doing blah, 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 blah. Maybe, you know, give it to God. And I thought, yeah, okay. Give this one to God. So anyway, every time the car stopped on the way to the courthouse, another guy from the recovery house was taking me to court in an older car, and every time it stopped, I wanted to get out, man, open the door and just walk away, you know, because I could do that. And I really wanted to, and I remembered some of the things that I had heard, you know what, hey, Billy, you've ran all your life, man, from everything, and you're going to have to face the music, you know. And I thought, man, this is really cold, you know. And but it got me to the courthouse, and I went through there, and you know, and he did, you know, he sentenced me as the law prescribes. You know where you're going, man. And then there was a hesitation there, suspended. First 3 years, you know, summary probation, testing, blah, blah, blah. I got to play. You know, I got 6 months in the county jail, man. I've never done county time in my life, you know. And I thought, wow, man, you know, man, there is hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel, you know. So I went to jail. Of course, at first I thought, yeah, I gave it to God. God made his first mistake. What the hell is he sending me to jail for even at all? You know, I don't have nothing to learn there. But I did have something to learn there because I really didn't know, to be really honest with you, if I wanted to be clean, really. I didn't know, man. And what would I do if I was faced with narcotics? Like somebody cooking up stuff and, you know, you get that... Would I say, no, I don't want any? I doubted that. I seriously doubted that. But anyway, that was the reason that I went to jail, because I had to find out. And I was there for a short period of time when a guy that I used to use with, man, ended up in front of my cell. I was locked in the cell. He was out on the tier, and he had the sack. You know, his old lady was running. He had an outfit, and he had one for me, you know. And said, hey, Billy, man, I got one for you, you know. And I remember exactly what I told him. These guys have heard this story before. I said, hey, not today. Check again tomorrow. That's what I told him, you know. And he looked at me kind of funny. He was fucked up, man. He was cross-eyed, scratching his ass, sweating, you know. And he didn't stay too long, and he was walking down the tier, and I was on the bottom bunk. I sat down, and I thought, man, you know, I don't want to call him back. I didn't want to call him back, man. Like, oh, it'd feel so good and this and that, because it's double good when you're locked down, you know. And that's when I knew. That was my spiritual experience, man. I knew right then I was on to something, and I wanted to go back to that place and find out more about the gift, because I feel as though that had came from a power greater than myself that I really didn't understand much about, you know. Tried to, but couldn't, and still, you know, haven't figured out, you know, why I was given that gift and so many other people weren't, you know. People that were exposed to exactly the same thing that I was exposed to, that hurt as badly as I had hurt in my life, and they weren't able to stay, and a lot of them died after being exposed to the program. So I realized what a gift it was, and you know, from that point to where I'm at now, you know, I mean, man, life has showed up. And I always tell people, hey, if you come here looking for a cakewalk, you know, you ought to pull the pin right now, because life doesn't work that way. Life has got a lot of real sharp edges, and a lot of things happen that, you know, make you apply some principles in your life, man. And I'm real grateful for the God that is in my life today that I don't understand, but I keep trying to achieve more in that arena, because I know it's really contingent upon that for me to keep the gift. I know that longevity here is no exemption from getting loaded. That's been proven to me. You know, Van Hayes was all the proof that I needed after 20 years clean. And he used to say at meetings, if you're a newcomer and thinking about going out, the best thing that can happen to you is for you to get back to this meeting and raise your hand as a newcomer. That's the best thing that can happen, you know. And he died. His son, Eric, found him in the back seat of his new Lexus, dead, after 20 years here. He was my barber. He was just a fucking sweetheart of a guy, man. And, you know, so me being here, the period of time that I've been here isn't worth a cup of coffee or two dead flies, man. It is to me, because I've been able to experience life as it really is. I live in the real world today, man, not in illusion and fantasy, man, and that's the only thing that I knew before I got here. I was dreaming, you know, like, hey, someday something's going to happen, man. It's going to make my life all right, you know, like a big titted broad with a lot of money. What a fucking joke I was, man. You know, number one, a practicing addict is not available for anything. You're not available, man. You're busy doing what you gotta do. And man, I'm sure that there was an abundance of opportunities that fly right by you, man. And had you been available, man, maybe you would have went somewhere, you know. And I don't blame anybody for anything in my life today, man. I accept my life as it is, man, and I'm real grateful that I've got it, you know, and that I've had it for a while, you know. I mean, I've got a kid, and I've got 3 grandkids, and I got a new liver, blah, 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 on and on and on, you know. So, you know, and everything that's in my life today, really, I invited it there. I invited the virus into my life, you know, IV drug user, blah. I'm sure there's a few people in here with the plague, you know. And so life goes on, and you know, and I think about, you know, what would be in store for me if I did sever that spiritual contact, man? What would happen? You know, okay, I would really be a short story because of my physical condition, but more than likely I would go through the few assets that I got today, you know. I have an RV. And a motorcycle, on and on and on. But, you know, if I went out, what would be waiting for me, man? With my luck, what would happen to Bill? Probably rob a whatever, you know, and a robbery detected in progress, you know, end up in an alley somewhere shooting it out, you know what I mean? And I'd get shot, you know. They wouldn't kill me, but they'd shoot my dick off, and I'd go back to Folsom without a dick. So I don't want that to happen. Hey, I'm happily married. I'm going to see my wife later in the day, and we're going to go to a thing down in Ventura. And originally, I'm from Compton. I was born in Compton, and it was the area that I started out in. And now I live in Ventura, and I'm going to go do a little Johnny Cash tribute later in the day with another friend that he's just going on dialysis now. You know, all of us, you know, I mean, you know, I got here when I was 37. I've been here 33 years now, so I'm 70 fucking years old, man. What am I going to do out there? You know, I'd probably be a little out of place, you know. I mean, but I know one thing, man, I could probably fix as fast as anybody out there. After all that time, you know, you don't ever forget it. It's like riding a bicycle, man, you know. And I don't want to go back there, and I know that I don't. And really, in the past few years, it's really been proven to me because of the number of my friends that have died. They all died clean. They came to this program, they never used again, and in that process, man, they got quite a life for themselves, you know, and they lived it to the fullest. And you know, we all have to leave this planet, man, and they did, but they had the ability through this program to have a quality life, you know. And you know, that's my goal, you know, is to stay here for whatever's left for me, one day at a time. You know, I don't, you know, there's nothing attractive about, you know, the life that I came from, the things that I did to myself, the things that I did to other people, you know, because being totally self-centered, self-obsessed, you know, you do some really ugly things. I did, you know. I can remember doing things, man, that on the way to carry the act out, man, I would think, you are a sorry motherfucker. You are sorry, you know, because you're going to fuck over somebody you know, and you're going to take their shit, you know, and how do you live with that, you know? And I think the progression of this disease, I've learned a few things here, man. I used to think, hey, you know, shit, it just ain't what it used to be. You know, the drugs aren't as good and blah, 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 on and on and on. And the reality is that my body doesn't assimilate narcotics the way that it used to, you know. That, you know, in the beginning, I mean, God forbid it would have stayed that way. I would have never came here. Why? You know, it was an answer for me. It lit my ass up. I was a part of something. I was as addicted to the lifestyle as I was the drugs. Hey, I liked all that shit. The excitement, the adrenaline, the thieving, and the running, the gun, and all that shit, man. I loved it. I loved the people that I ran with, people from the neighborhood, you know. I bought the whole package, man, and bought it for life, I thought, you know. And it's not that way today, man. I had a real interesting point I was going to bring up, and it flew away, too. But it may come back here in a minute. But, oh, the, you know, the progression of it. Okay, so, you know, as the disease progresses, you know, and, you know, like in the beginning, you know, you have some nice music on and nodding and scratching and just right there, man, right there where everything in the world is okay, man, better than okay. It's fucking good, you know. And then at the end of my using, man, what I would do after I slam, you know what I mean? I like shadow boxing. I like being in the nude, you know. I'm really strange, you know. And, you know, like really weird, man, you know. And I thought, well, you know, it's the drugs, and, you know. And my first encounter was when I did go back. I was actually, when I got out, I lived in Fresno, and I ended up using with a few guys there. And I was going to L.A. to score, and boom, I got nailed down there. And I went back to the pen, and I had reached a point in my life where, you know, I knew that I grew up in them places, and I had done a lot of time, that if I couldn't get some time on the streets, man, I was going to be totally institutionalized. I knew that. Because, you know what, man, I had a degree of comfort there. I didn't have any problems in the pen. I got by really good. I was worked in the barbershop, always had, you know, 20, 30 cartons of cigarettes. High roller, you know what I mean? I was somebody there. But the dilemma was, when I got out here, I wasn't fucking nobody. Kids were running around in Corvettes, and I'm walking in a pair of cardboard shoes with $40 in my pocket, you know? And I never fit out here. So, I don't know why. But okay, where was I at? And I keep losing it here. Where was I at?
We were together, wherever it was, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
So, I go back. I went down, three of us went to L.A. There was a Chinaman, a Chican, me, and a black dude in a car. I wonder who ratted on us. So I got nailed, and I went back, and I knew that, you know, that maybe, you know, I would be there maybe for the remainder of my life. And they really screwed up. They sent me to Susanville. You know, they're going to send me to camp. I've never been to camp, you know, and I got in that little training program and all that shit, man. And, you know, I had a friend of mine that had come back on a violation, and he had been running down in Mexico for about 5 years. He was telling me all these tales about what's going on down there. And I thought, that's what I'll do, man. As soon as I get to camp, I'm gone, you know. And I'm going to stay out, and I'll be something. And I thought, Mexico, yeah, that'd be the place, man. Maybe I could get a job like be a janitor in a heroin factory. That would be, man, hey, you know, you talk about dreaming, you know, dream on, you know. So anyway, I did. They eventually sent me to camp, man. I was there 2 days, and I was gone, you know. And I did. I went to the other side, and I was over there for, actually, I lasted a couple of years down there. And it was down there that, like, in certain areas down there, there's no stuff. You know, not that stuff isn't everywhere, but in certain areas, like, nothing there. But you can make the drugstores work really good down there. And that's where I started really going out of my head a lot, man, you know, on opiates, you know. that I would be talking to people that weren't there. I'd be answering phones that weren't there, you know, shit like that. And then I always would say, well, it's these drugs that I'm taking, these pharmaceutical drugs, you know, they got other shit in there, and that's what's fucking my mind up. Hey, my mind was just fucked up, you know. And every time when I came back, even just shooting stuff, man, I'd go out into another planet. You wouldn't want to use with me, man. I was an embarrassment, you know. I remember one time I was over at the Connections pad, and he liked me a lot. He used to take care of me. And you know, four of them came out of the bathroom. That's all. No more could fit in there, so I was waiting out in the living room. And they all come out, and he says, Billy, he says, there's a pile. He said, go, whatever you want, man, it's in there. I had a lot of stuff, and there was a big pile. I go in the outfits, all in the back of the toilet, you know. And I thought, man, you know, and there's nobody in there watching me. You know, I thought, man, I'm going to load this motherfucker up. And I did, and, you know, and I slammed and all that stuff. And I really don't know what happened after that, but I know the only thing I know is that we were all going to go gambling down in Gardena. And you know, apparently, like I say, I like to disrobe. And I walked out into the living room, buck naked. And there were four guys there, and they're old ladies, you know, and they're all sitting, it's a big living room, and I walk in, and they go, what the, and then I looked down, and I went, oh, you know, so, yeah, the using changed, man, it changed a lot, you know, so, but, you know, it's, and then, you know, what can I say about the program, man? I mean, I was at a little convention last weekend up in Utah, and it was just really neat, man, the people that you run into, the people that you can relate with, you know, because I have something in common with everyone in this room, you know, and I know what it is to be ruptured, you know, and to have no hope at all, you know, and then to be confused, especially in the beginning, you know, where you figure, well, how is all this stuff going to change my life? How does that happen? There is one problem, man, that I can really see in the program. It works too slowly for most people. No, that's the truth. They don't hang around long enough for these things to start happening, man, and they leave, and a lot of time it's just a tragic story, you know. I think the life of the practicing addict, for the most part, is really just, it's a sad story, you know, and there's a lot of hurt, and there's a lot of pain, and, you know, and it doesn't have to be that way. I know that there's new people here, man, and I'll tell you, man, you are so fortunate to be in one of these rooms if you only go to one meeting. Because you got to know there is a way out. There's a fucking way out, man. You know, you don't have to live that way. You don't have to go back to them places ever. You know, I've been out for 40 years, you know, and I like it out. And I still remember all of my numbers. A56447 B YA26624. You know, numbers that you knew would be on your grave. That they were going to bury you there. So, you know, life today, man, it's full. And a lot of times, you know, it's not, some of the things are not the way that I think they or I would like them to be, but I know one thing. I have been provided for with everything that I've needed in my life, you know, and a lot of the things that I've wanted, you know, I've experienced those. And so many of my friends, I mean, this really blows me away, all of you people in this room up here, the little towns up here, you know, I go, man, you know, look at all these. Where'd these guys come from, man? You know? And the room's full, and I think there's a lot of hope here for all of us, you know. For me, there is, seeing you here and seeing new people. I love seeing new people because it tells me, hey, it's doing the same thing it's always done, man. It's kicking ass. If you were doing good and having a good time, I don't think you'd be in this room, you know, if everything was okay. I mean, why come here, you know? Or if you could mend yourself, you'd just stay home and take care of it, you know? So we can't do that, man. We need each other desperately, and we really need that power greater than ourselves. Whatever that might be for you in the beginning, it really doesn't make any difference, because I think that if you're a little out there on the concept at all, man, I think things will be revealed to you, man, that you know what? You, the only thing that you really have to believe, you ain't God. You ain't running shit. That's the truth. You might think that you are from time to time. A little control issues, you know. But you know what? You ain't running nothing, you know. It is a total miracle that, you know, that we're still here. How in the hell did that happen? You know, we're still alive. I'm an old man. You know, I don't want, I look down at my stomach and I go, where'd that come from? Oh, it's all the surgery that I've had. Bullshit, I like half and half on my fucking oatmeal. I do. Right. So, let's see. You know, the past couple of years for me, were really difficult because of the number of my friends that left the program, that passing away, leaving here, you know. And for a couple of years down there, man, it was just, it seems like a couple times a week there was memorials, and the only time we were getting together was, you know, at the memorial deals, man. And it gets, it wears on you, man. It makes you weary, you know, because you're losing a lot of old time friends, you know, that you've been friends with for many, many years, even before coming to the program. And so I started a retreat because I wanted the gathering of people to be in a setting where we're not, you know, mourning a loss, you know what I mean? So that's in its third year now, and that's doing really good, man. And I really look forward. I'm an H&I guy, man. I go anywhere. H&I, yeah, let me in there. You know, from the very beginning, I got active in going to them places, and I still am, you know. And there's just so many things for us to do here. You know, I thought in the beginning, I thought, okay, if I'm going to be clean around here, if that does work, which I doubt, what am I going to do? The only thing that I've done in my life, man, is use drugs. That's it. I never worked. I never, you know, the AA meetings, and we used to have to go to them, man, I didn't relate with people that had attained a certain stature in their life, like businesses or whatever, and then they lost it because of their disease, you know. I didn't relate with people like that. What do you have when you're fucking 12 years old, you know? And, you know, the tragedies that occurred early on in my life, you know, which I really blame God for, they were tragic for me because, you know, okay, all of a sudden, when I was like six years old, my mom died real quick, boom, in about a week she was gone. So that kind of shattered the family, and my father was an alcoholic and an embarrassment, you know, to anybody. I mean, he's the guy, he'd make it almost to the house, and then he'd just fall out on the lawn. He always wore khakis, you know, and he always peed his pants, you know. And I would see him laying there, man, and I'd go, man, I don't ever want to be like that, you know. And then when my mom died, you know, like I say, the family was broken up, and my brother and myself were farmed out to my father's father, and my sister went to my mother's side. But so, and this guy, the grandfather, was a tyrant, man, and he was he never drank or used drugs, but he should have. I wish that he had found something, because I think there's a lot of things in life that are you know, worse than drug addiction. I am glad that I found narcotics, because I don't know what I would have developed into hadn't I, because I couldn't deal with shit, you know. And I know that I pick up the paper and read about things that different people do in this life, and I don't relate and I can't understand, but maybe if I hadn't have found drugs, maybe I would understand, maybe I would be one of them. I don't know. I know that whatever another human being is capable of, I too am capable of doing that. You know, and that's scary because you pick up the paper today and you go, fuck, how can somebody do that, man? How can you cook your kid in a microwave? How do you do that? I don't understand, man. So the narcotics, man, hey, I loved them, and I'm glad they were there because it provided an answer for me. You know, it was total and it was complete, man, and it saved my life, you know. And so anyway, what happened for me was this guy was a real physical guy, and he was an ass kicker. Man, he was a big son of a bitch. His hands were as big as twice the mine, I think. At least it felt that way when I'd get him upside the head. And a great thing happened for me there also, you know, after I'd been living with him for a few years, you know, and hey, man, you know, I was used to having breakfast cereal and stuff like that when, you know, the family was together, man. I went with him. The first breakfast I had with him, it was fat back and beans. And I went, what the fuck is this, man? I like a half and half on my oatmeal. But it was just real different, you know, but a great thing happened. And I was scared. I talk about fear. You know, I was filled with fear because I was always getting my ass kicked. And that fear motivated me, man, to do a lot of things that I did regret later. But a great thing happened after I'd been with him for a few years, man. He was older then. He was in his 70s like me today. What a trip that is. But anyway, he fell and he broke his hip, man. And you know what, man? That was my ticket to freedom. I was free. He couldn't catch me. He was in bed, man, you know. So I started my journey, you know, and I'm a runner by nature, you know, and that's the first thing that I started doing. So actually institutions came into my life long before narcotics. I was locked up as a little kid. When you run away from home and get caught, they lock your ass up, man, you know. And so you're in juvenile halls and you're in here. They send you one place and another, and you're moving up the ladder, you know. And then finally, you know, well, you're in youth authority now, you know. And there's gun towers and there's all that shit in the bigger places. So, you know, I look back on all that stuff and I go, man, you know, I'm so grateful for the program, for Jimmy K, you know, Jimmy K, you know. And I remember him at meetings and stuff like that. He used to harp on them traditions so much, man. I don't want to hear about no traditions. You know, let's hear about something else. But Jimmy was quite a guy, man. And, you know, I did a little history thing, which I'm not really a historian, but just covering the years of NA from, you know, from 53 till now, you know, the explosion that's occurred. I mean, you know, there's nearly, I think, 50,000 meetings today, you know. And in the beginning, I think when I got here, there was like 200 meetings. That's worldwide. And to see that growth and the people that are involved and the world conventions. And one of the greatest conventions that I went to personally was the 50th in San Diego. You know, that blew me away, man, you know. All those people from different countries and their struggles and the stuff that they've got to go through. And I went to, a few years back, I went to China for a couple of weeks. And I, you know, I mean, I got real grateful for living in this country once I was over there and seeing, you know, communism and all that stuff. But I thought, I wonder if there's any meetings over here. And I really didn't try to pursue it. Number one, I couldn't understand anybody, what the fuck they were talking about. I had no communication with anybody. And we ended up going through Shanghai. And Nolan was there, an old friend of mine. He's got, I don't know, close to 40 years clean now. And he was actually over there and had a meeting at his house, an NA meeting, you know. And I didn't find that out until later after I'd come back, and he came over here on a physical thing. He had some problems, and he was in town for a while. He said, man, I wish you would have called me. I said, well, I wish I would have had your number. So getting phone numbers is important, because you don't know where you're going to go, where you're going to end up. And the great thing about traveling, when you're in the program, wherever you go, man, you got someplace to go. There's other people there, and they can show you what's happening in the area and befriend you, man. And, you know, you go to a meeting and you hear different people, and it's just really become a way of life for me. You know, I mean, I'm so glad that I'm a part of it and privileged to be here and to come up here and try to share something with you guys, you know, that, you know, you got to try to pass it on. I think the most important thing for me, and sometimes I don't want to do it, it's like whenever the phone rings, that if somebody asks me to do something, that I will do that. If it's physically and financially possible, I'm going to do it, man, because if it wasn't for this program, man, I would not be here. I would not be alive. I wouldn't have experienced the life that I've experienced, man. I would have been history a long time back. I wouldn't have gotten a new liver, you know. That changed a lot of stuff in my life, man. You talk about grateful for just being alive and grateful to the family of someone that donated that organ, you know. And it just goes on and on. And many of my friends have had transplants, you know. And I'm so ingrained in this thing at this point, you know. And it's not, things aren't always well with me. I mean, I got problems now. I didn't know if I was going to be able to come up here because I thought I had a procedure this past Wednesday and they screwed up again, so now I go in the 2nd of July, you know, I got a tube in my side and all that shit. Who gives a fuck, you know? I'm alive. You know, whatever they're doing is working and I'm not going to question it, you know. But there's little problems along the way, but whenever there is, I've got a great sponsor. I've got great people in my life. I'm surrounded by recovery, man. I'm safe. I'm in a safe zone. And there's medications involved, too, man. I showed him my pills this morning, just anti-rejection stuff, you know. I take all of your pills. I take that many 3 times a day. A lot of pills, man. So when people start harping about medication, I say, hey, wait a minute. I don't want to hear it. I got to take medication to stay alive, man. And occasionally, I have to take pain-killing meds, you know, and not frequently, and I feel safe with those in the hospital. But my body doesn't know if it's a prescribed narcotic or not. It knows one thing. It's a narcotic. It knows that real good. And we're not like other people. I know that because I've been in the hospital, and when they come around with the pain meds and they give all these other people pain meds, they go to sleep. You know, when they give me pain meds, I got shit to do, man. I got things to do, and it doesn't make any difference if I got an IV running or not. I'll put it on the battery pack, and I'll take that with me. Because it's all important shit. So I know that the drugs, they still do that, you know. And you know what? I got to be really honest. It feels good. You know, it does. I don't like it, but it feels good, man. And my body will accept it, and I roll with it, you know. And I am very open to everyone about the whole deal. I think what kills more people around this program than anything is secrets. I'm not going to tell anybody about that. I don't want anybody to know I had to take pain medication, you know. And, you know, the last time I was in the hospital was about 3 weeks ago, was the most horrifying experience I have ever fucking had in my life. You know, that counts everything. Getting shot at, whatever. I'm in a surgical procedure, and the doctor, number one, the doctor looks like a teenager. Everybody looks so fucking young now. I thought, this kid's not even out of high school. And he tells me what they're going to do. You know, and I'm laying there listening. He says, yeah, we're going to give you morphine, fentanyl, Versed. And he says, you're not going to be all the way out, but he says, you won't feel anything. And I thought, well, that sounds like a pretty good ride. But what happened was he was wrong. And they gave me all that shit, and the lady was right there, and it's all IV stuff, and you know, you got tubes running. And she says, well, here it comes, and she cranked it on, or whatever they do, maybe it was a syringe, and I don't know. I couldn't see that far. I wanted to, but I couldn't. And she ran it, and I felt I didn't even really get a good call. You know that call I'm talking about. I didn't get nothing, and I felt like a mild euphoria, and I thought, well, you know, I guess I won't feel anything. Wrong. Hey, man, there was 5 or 6 people in there, and they couldn't hold me down, you know. And, man, I screamed at the top of my fucking, as loud as I could fucking scream, man, and I was squirming and fucking yelling. I couldn't fucking believe it. And they had to call in a anesthesiologist. They had to put me down. That's the only thing they could do, and then they finished the procedure. And then when I woke up from that, I came out of it, you know, like a few hours later. When I came out of it, I was loaded. I was almost like drunk. You know, I don't know what they pumped in me, but I was just, and I was pissed off, man, because the only thing I could remember is that pain, you know, which I can still remember, man, and it was a motherfucker. It really was, you know, so I was going to go. As soon as I woke up, man, I said, I'm out of here. And I put my clothes on, man, and I'm walking down the hallway, and I'm going to leave the hospital. There's nobody there to even pick me up. I'm in West L.A. I live in Ventura. I haven't got a car there. What am I going to do? I'm out of my head, man. So anyway, they talked. A few doctors came in, and they convinced me that I should really be staying in the hospital, you know. And I did for several days and then was released. But, you know, my life today, man, it's, you know, amidst everything that's going on, man, I'm just real excited to, number one, to be here, to be with you, you know, to be with my own kind, and, you know, to have something to look forward to. My wife is going to visit me today. I'm married. I've been married for nearly 20 years now. I got a nice old lady and everything. We don't live together. Kind of weird, you know. She lives in Paso Robles. I live in Ventura. We visit each other when we can. Kind of a nice deal. You know, it's just the way that it worked out for me, and I don't want to get into why that happened, but, you know, it did, and that's the way it is, and she can accept it. I can accept it, too, and I'm loyal. I don't fuck around. I trip in my head sometimes, but then I think, God, could I handle that? I might need some of them blue pills to take care of that. But, you know, I'm real glad you guys are here, man, and I've kind of ran it out. And I believe when you're through, you know. And but hopefully, you know, that, you know, somebody could relate with some of the stuff. And, you know, and I'm really, I'm excited for you people because I had no idea you had all this stuff going on. It blows me away, man. And you do this quarterly, and, you know, I'll probably be up here again, man, just to attend and listen. I really like listening. You know, that's one of my things now. And, you know, in a small town, you know, you... it's real refreshing to get somebody from the outside to hear something new. And you know, I know when I run a speaker meeting in Ventura, and I get people from all over, and, you know, it's just, life is great today, man. And the new people that are here, man, hey, hang on, man. Hang on and just see what happens. You know, stay for 90 days. If you don't like it, go back where you come from, you know. They say we'll refund your misery, you know. But if you stay here and you go to meetings, 90 meetings and 90 days, all that stuff that you hear at meetings, you know, that corny shit, you know, after a while, yeah, man, you know, blah, 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 blah. Go, try it out and just see what happens. If you don't believe that this works, try to prove that it doesn't and do it and see what happens. Prove to us that it doesn't work. and see what happens. You know, you may be really pleasantly surprised at what happens in your life, man. Because if you're new here, man, and even if you're old here, there's so many things that's going to appear in your life that you have absolutely no idea of right now. Not a clue, man. And, you know, when circumstance and opportunity cross paths and availability, you don't know where you're going. You don't have a clue, man. I ended up being an iron worker for 25 years, man, putting high-rise buildings. How in the hell did I end up there? I never worked a day in my life, you know. And somebody just came by and says, hey, you need a job? Yeah. So the weird thing was is that when I went out on a job, they thought I knew what I was doing. So it's got to be a quick study. But we're provided everything that we need to get by today. So, you know, it worked out. But life's an adventure. It's exciting, man. And I'm just really glad, man. It's good to see Ray in the back. You know, he comes down to the fair every year. He goes to meetings all the time. See, he's got some place to go down, you know. And all of us do, you know. You're welcome anywhere. If you're an addict, man, and you walk into any of these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, man, you have people embrace you. You know, where else does that happen? You know, to say, hey, you're an addict, come on in, brother. You know, you're welcome here. And let's do something. What are you doing? Where are you going? Hey, man, let's go. You know, and to become a part of that. You know, I don't know. I done a little traveling. When in my using, you know, and I never had any place to go, man. I go to the room, you know, or wherever I was staying, you know, and by myself a lot, man, and really in agony, you know, and it's not that way today, man. To be accepted, man, and be a part of something that is positive and real, you know, is real refreshing, man, because after living in a totally negative vein, you know, all of my life, I knew I was doing wrong, man, you know. And it was very difficult at the end for me to look in the mirror and see what I seen. It was painful, man, because I was somebody that just never even got to the ball game, man. Never got there, you know. And the game of life, man, is here, man, and you can become a participant in that, man, and have something meaningful and real. Not an illusion or a fantasy, man. Your perceptions of life will change the longer you stay here, you know. And it's just a great place to be. And I want to thank all of you for being here. And, you know, have a great day. Thank you.